Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, the best. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day, and the pickle bar, led by my two favorites, the Barrels and the Dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Friday. A lot of people, because of just a slight change in schedule, they don't get to hear Matt open the show and rant.
I think that might be a good thing.
No, no, I'm opening the door now. What's bothering you?
I would say I'm...
I can't wait to hear this.
And I want to be careful with this because I still want the focus to be that DeMar Hamlin has just made remarkable progress. And he's talking to teammates and everything else.
He's breathing on his own. Yeah. He FaceTimed today. That's
exactly.
So good.
I mean, I'm just so happy to hear all that. I really am. But now it comes to the logistics of moving on from that into week 18 and get it ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I don't really blame the Cincinnati Bengals for feeling a little bit slighted with some of the decisions that have been made over the past 12 hours. They've been crowned the AFC North champs, which kind of caught everybody off guard. But yet, if Baltimore still beats them on Sunday, they may not get a home game as a division champ, because if Baltimore wins, according to these new rules that were just put out last night, then it comes down to a coin flip. I don't really get that. If you're going to give them the division championship already, which I kind of found a little surprising, then, because either way it's not going to add up, then why are we doing this coin flip if Baltimore wins? I guess if you go out there, you win the game, you get the home game, but I don't know. That just doesn't really fly with me, especially with a team that's really responded very well. They're playing Cincinnati. They're playing each other.
Oh, Cincinnati's going to win the game. I mean, come on. I mean, really?
They should, but
they'll win the game. It's not. It doesn't matter.
I'm just saying
it's irrelevant. They'll win the game. Take care of your own business. You win the game.
I get that. And they should win this game, but I still don't know. I'm with Cincinnati on this, is what I'm saying here.
And they are so happy you were with them. You know, it's not the only tough thing that Buffalo's dealing with. Did you hear about the play-by-play announcer, John Murphy?
No.
Suffered a stroke.
Oh, boy.
Recovering at home.
Oh.
So Chris Brown's going to do the play-by-play for them. John, I do not know John. I know of John, and everybody just says great things about him. So.
Oh, yeah, yoy.
And... yeah. And then Todd Blackledge is leaving ESPN. He is going to NBC. He and Noah Eagle will be the primetime will be the primetime NBC Big Ten broadcasters.
Wow. Good for Noah Eagle. He's earned it, I tell you. He sounds so much like his dad, but he's very good, though.
I've never heard him.
I do like him. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard him. I know he did a Penn State game, but obviously I'm not going to hear him do a Penn State game. For obvious reasons. I did go up to meet him, but it turned out he wasn't up there at the time I went up to the booth to say hi. I'm sure he will be great on it, and Todd Blackledge will help make him be great, because Todd Blackledge is outstanding as a broadcaster. Outstanding. But you know what? I mean, NBC wanted to do something big for Saturday night Big Ten football. That's a big move. That is a big move. You needed to get a signature analyst to do that, and they got one in Todd Blackledge. So that is a big part of what NBC... I mean, NBC wants to go big. They needed... Just like Amazon needed to get Al Michaels and needed to get Kirk Herbstreit, they got Todd Blackledge, and then you pair him up with Noah Eagle, and everybody says he's one of the up-and-comers. I've never heard him. I know it's kind of hard to believe that I haven't, but I have not. And everybody tells me he's really good, so... Yeah. Any other complaints? See, people miss this segment from you.
No, that was my only complaint, is I understand the Bengals' gripe. It is a little bogus.
Nothing about the Prince of Wales or anything like that? No, it's all good? Okay.
I could give a rat's tail about the Prince of Wales, to be perfectly honest with you.
His wife speaks highly of you. All right. We have Chris Mack today. We'll talk about DeMar Hamlin, because obviously Chris got to cover him his time there. You know, the Bills, by the way, will play the Patriots. So you're saying that they've already told the Bengals that they're AFC Central champions, but they actually haven't won it.
That's what I'm seeing here, yeah. The media knew about this before some of the players did.
Wow.
Somebody asked Joe Mixon about winning the AFC North title, and they're like, and he was taken aback by it. He said, I didn't know we were AFC North champs.
Hmm. By the way, tribute to T. Higgins. Some people, of course, you know, because he's the one that, you know, in a football play hit DeMar Hamlin. He spent 2 days by his bedside. Did you know that? How about that?
Oh, that I didn't know. That's awesome.
You know, that's because he didn't go around saying, look at me, look at me. I mean, it's amazing how you can do incredibly kind things that nobody knows about. But, you know, he spent a couple days, you know. Now, maybe not every waking minute, obviously. You know, there's stuff he has to do, but he's been there. And to his credit. The story on Michigan, I really don't know what to say about that, because I don't know what they're going to be charged with. So they're under investigation for multiple rules violations. There is one level one violation against Jim Harbaugh himself, and multiple level twos. So here is what they are accused of. The level two violations reportedly include accusations that Michigan held practices with too many coaches on the field. Contacted two prospects during the extended COVID-19 dead period. Observed practices with an unauthorized video feed. The level one violation is the most serious, is that Harbaugh misled the NCAA when it approached him with the allegations. So, a level one violation could result in suspension and, in some cases, grounds for dismissal based on the language of the coach's contract. In this case, the school could terminate Harbaugh's contract. Doubt that will happen. Providing false and misleading information is a violation which deals with unethical conduct. Violations of this bylaw include obstructing an investigation or encouraging another person to lie. It is considered a significant violation, but not always level one, but they're saying this one's level one. It is rare that you get hit with that, but UConn basketball coach Kevin Ollie was hit with that, providing false and misleading information. Ollie was eventually given a 3-year show cause penalty and fired by the school. He then, by the way, ended up suing. The unethical conduct violation has its foundation base in the old phrase, the cover-up is worse than the crime. But there is no language in the NCAA manual about being an automatic level one violation, so there's gray area. So, who knows what's going to turn out there? Now, Michigan's going to have 90 days from receiving the notice of allegations to respond to the NCAA. Let's face it, this does leave some space for Harbaugh if he wishes to take an NFL job.
Interesting, isn't it?
Well, he tried to, you know, he went after, no matter what he's saying, we all know he went after the Vikings job last year. He went out there and interviewed for it. And then he comes back and he pulls the old, and I hate this. You know, so, no, Michigan's the only job I ever wanted. Well, that's not true. You just went out to Minnesota and interviewed. Would you go out there just to talk to him for 8-9 hours?
And he just did that again last night. He said, I don't know, you never know what the future holds, but I'm committed to being Michigan's coach in 2023.
It's just, but like he says to everybody that you know, Michigan's the only job I ever wanted. Well, that's not true. Okay, you don't sit there and waste 9 hours of your life, because the interview process when he went to Eden Prairie took 9 hours.
That's right.
Well, if Michigan's the only, you just look at him and go, no, I'm committed to Michigan. That's the only place I want to be. And you don't bother flying there, going up in a hotel, reviewing everything that is involved the Minnesota Vikings, then going through the 9-hour interview process, then going back to the airport, then flying back. I mean, all for something that, no, I really didn't want? Come on.
Yeah, he's a weasel.
That just doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to use your words. Just can't imagine what's being taught in your house. All right. I'm almost afraid to talk to your kids.
I mean, it's one thing for him to be leaving for the NFL after getting embarrassed by TCU when he's expected to take the next step. And now he's trying to leave for the NFL probably because now that these have come into light. That's a whole nother level. Just saying.
The extra, I mean, like, this, but some of these, like, the extra coaches on the field. All right, jeez. You know, I sit there and, like, you got to be kidding. Those are the analysts and things like that. It's like, come on. You know. I don't sweat small stuff like that, and it is small stuff. By the way, speaking of analysts, you see who's one of the new analysts for Penn State football? Calvin Lowry. Had a long talk with Calvin at practice, three weeks ago? I think it was 3 weeks ago. And it was before letter of intent day, I remember that. So it was maybe 3 weeks ago. And he had been at Tulsa, and he'd had a couple thousand-yard receivers at Tulsa. He also coached special teams at Tulsa and had really developed a great reputation. But, of course, you know, Tulsa changed the coaching staff, and Kevin Wilson, who came from Ohio State to Tulsa, decided not to keep him. Okay. So, you know, and Alan Zimaitis and I were talking, and, you know, and AZ said, oh, he says, hopefully can get Calvin in and be one of the analysts, the whole thing. I said, yeah, it'd be great. No, you know, he knows this place, but he's obviously a quality coach. It's not like he just started coaching. Been coaching for several years now, and he has a really good reputation. And I, you know, and it turned out that he's been picked up now with Charlie Fry has gone down to Florida Atlantic because Charlie had been one of the offensive analysts, the former quarterback. Calvin's going to be, I think, a big plus for them as one of the analysts here. I was thrilled to see it happen. I mean, like I said, when I mean long talk with him. I mean, he and I talked on the sideline at practice one day for about an hour. And I'm thrilled for him because he's one of the great guys ever. And what a safety he was at Penn State. He made that big interception against Ohio State and brought it back to the 2-yard line that set up Michael Robinson's touchdown run. And that's the one I always cite, that if you understand the game, you know, I was saying to Calvin, I said, boy, Posluszny was big for you on that play. Because, oh, Posluszny had dropped into an area because he understood the proper depth of a drop of a linebacker, and Troy Smith had to throw it over Posluszny, and there was Calvin playing center field, and he brought it back to the 2. So it's great to have Calvin Lowry back. He still looks like he could play, by the way. Still looks like he could play. We'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK, the home of the Matt Cotrillo Rant.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
I felt it was just important to bring that back because so many people have been telling me they had gone out and they gone to Brewer's Outlet and they bought all this cheese and they needed some wine to go with it.
Is that so?
I'm just trying to link the sponsor.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. And you need to stock up for the weekend. It's the final weekend of the NFL regular season. Matt has spent most of this regular season ecstatic, joyful, and now he's scared to death.
That about sums it up, actually, yes.
You worry me. All right. So, oh, my goodness. Just enjoy it. You got the best team. Come on. You got the best team. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, and you know my two favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Let's see, Prime Video, let's see how they did. Last year on Fox and NFL Network, the package on Thursday Night Football averaged about 16.2 million viewers. Now remember, Fox means, of course, it's over the air. So Prime Video and local stations that carried it this year averaged 9.58. Or based on Amazon's metrics, 11.3 million. So this is a 41% audience drop. I admit I watched most of them. Did not see all of them. I did not watch a second of Dallas and Tennessee last week. Was packing, and then we went out to eat for a birthday, and wanted to do that. That was way more important than watching Tennessee and Dallas. You, of course, took it every second because, out of hatred.
I watched a decent chunk of that, but once the Cowboys were pulling away and I knew that game was going to be a joke to begin with, then I moved on.
Yeah. The average viewership for Fox's 2021 package included a Christmas Day matchup between the Packers and Browns that had 28.6 million. They averaged 13.3 million viewers for the Thursday night package. Remember, Amazon's paying billions. Now, we'll see. Oh, maybe next year it grows. Thursday Night Football's audience was much younger in 2022 than in 2021. The median age for Thursday Night Football was 47 this year compared to 54. The overall audience in the 18 to 34 demographic increased by 2 million, so the NFL is going to love that. Up from 1.9 million for Thursday Night Football last year, so that's an increase of 200,000. That demographic made up 22% of the overall audience, in contrast to 14%. Most people watch 76 minutes of a game. The Amazon audience watched 85 minutes. Now, let's not get too carried away with this, because it is exponentially more difficult to change the channel when you go to Prime Video as opposed to being on linear TV. You're sitting there on linear TV, boom, you can switch to another game, boom, you can switch to maybe you want to watch basketball, boom, maybe you want to just watch another show, boom, you can do that. I want to watch 60 Minutes, I can do that. Right? On Prime, you've got to get out of Prime Video. Then you got to be able to get yourself back on the cable. Then you got to be able to, so it's more difficult to do.
I've tried it. Yeah, it's not fun.
Right? But, like Matt, and you watch Thursday Night Football, like Matt, and he really is Exhibit A here, they are wealthier than the average income. $98,500 compared to $82,800 for those who watch linear broadcasts. Now, it's about 82.8, but Matt makes eight figures. So that kind of bumped it up to 98.5. I'm just a simple broadcasting shepherd trying to go week to week.
So that's the, my almighty!
That's the demographic there. Okay. All right, so then tempers flared in the Indiana-Iowa game last night. We always talk about Fran McCaffrey. We refer to it when he gets mad as FranCon 1. And I like Fran, by the way. I get along really well with him. But last night, Mike Woodson ripped him after the game. But less than a minute left in Iowa by 2 points. Iowa associate head coach Yazir Rosemond approached an official to speak with him. McCaffrey apparently didn't like the discussion and got into it with Rosemond's face. McCaffrey was pulled away by an assistant and also a player, but it kicked off a mini fracas between the benches and the teams needed to be held back. While a referee initially signaled he was going to call a technical foul on McCaffrey, he already had been called for a technical foul in the first half. One was never assessed. Second technical would have seen Fran thrown out of the game. Afterward, Woodson was asked about the incident. He did not mince any words. That's BS. For broadcasting purposes, I used initials. You can print that one. Because when you let coaches come across half court into your space, that's BS. It is. A reporter then asked about whether or not a technical should have been called on Fran. And Woodson was resolute in his opinion. They did call a tech and they pulled it back, which is also BS. Guys should have been thrown out of the GD game. Between this and Michigan's Hunter Dickinson calling Michigan players, quote, scumbags, there's no love lost between rivals in the Big Ten these days. Iowa goes to Bloomington February 28th. Yeah. Let me see it. I want to at least check in here. I want to see who was officiating that game last night, just for a couple of. Let me see here. Yeah, is it Fran knows the nose? Courtney Green's good. Oh, no. Joe Sells is, Paul Sells is there. Paul and Larry Scarrato, those are three really good officials. And Paul had started to call a T, pulled it back. Like, Paul Sells and Larry Scarrato and Courtney Green are really, really terrific officials, so. I don't know if it's bad that it gets to the point where I can just look at the video and know who the guys are. But, yeah, I've known these guys for a while. I've talked to them a lot, too. Now, do you have any games you're doing this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I have Sealands Grove at Jersey Shore on the SBC Sports Live YouTube channel tomorrow night with Ray Boyer.
Nice.
At Jersey Shore. My first trip out there, actually.
Oh, good.
So that's tomorrow night at 7:30.
Jersey Shore, I've never been to the gym or the football field. I've never seen high school.
Seals had an exciting win at Milton for their first Hack 1-1 of the year the other night. So that was fun. They blew a 12-point fourth-quarter lead, but then after Milton tied it, Sealands Grove went on a 9-0 run to close out the game. So they're 6-4 on the year, 1-0 in Hack 1 play. So that's tomorrow night. And then Sunday, I'm back in Soika for Bucknell Women against Lafayette.
Right. Very nice. I just have to go to Philly. And then I get to stay home for,
I think you said 8 days, right?
8 days. Yeah, 8 days. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that'll work out. Yeah, because they got a home game and then they're off next weekend. So, That'll work out just fine. Let's see what games we're picking here. Let's see what the Kings sent us. Let's see. Tennessee, Jacksonville, New England, Buffalo. Baltimore, Cincinnati. Jets, Miami, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Dallas, Washington, Detroit, Green Bay. And Georgia, TCU. What? No Giants, Eagles? Ooh.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Wow. I thought for sure he put the Giants and Eagles in there.
No, that game would definitely not beat his standards.
Why?
Because it wouldn't be competitive to him in his eyes. Because the Giants are probably going to sit guys out.
You know, nobody knows what the Giants are going to do.
Right.
You know what? When the Giants... Okay, now this is a different coaching staff. Okay, different coaching staff. So let's go back to, you know, and this goes way back, 2007. Tom Coughlin, whom I have immense respect for. The Giants are in the playoffs no matter what. They're playing it with the game. Remember, the game was the night of the Alamo Bowl. Okay. So I didn't see much of it. I saw the end of it when I got back to my hotel room.
Are you talking Giants-Patriots 07?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. The Giants have nothing to play for. They're in. And they can't change their position in the playoffs. And they played everybody and all out.
Yep.
And New England won and went to 16-0.
Barely.
Right, but they won.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the NFL is not about style points, okay? And they win the game in a really tough, hard-fought game. I remember thinking at the end, like I said, I watched the last few minutes, and it was dramatic and it was exciting. You know, I already felt good anyway. Penn State had beaten Texas A&M, so I'm like, hey, this is good. I thought to myself, if they meet in the Super Bowl, the Giants probably now think they have a chance. And they did. Went to Glendale and beat them. So you don't know what approach, because Brian Daboll's a new head coach. I've only seen Brian coach X amount of games in his career, so I don't know how he handles this. He doesn't have a pattern, right? So I don't know what he's going to do.
I was actually a little surprised when I heard that the reports today that it sounded that they were probably not going to play, because I actually thought Brian Daboll would play everybody but Saquon.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I have not seen. I mean, you probably know better than I do.
There's just the reports out there. I mean, the official Giants injury report has two guys out, which includes one of the defensive linemen and Leonard Williamson and somebody else, but nobody else yet. But then they said it sounds like they're not going to play based on, like, their sources. Key guys like Saquon and Daniel Jones. But he's supposedly making those decisions tonight.
How crushing would it be if they won that game without those guys?
Yeah, that would be very bad.
I'm just asking.
It would be very crushing.
But you're not playing well.
Because that would take out all of my all of my confidence that I have left.
If the Eagles are playing next weekend, you're going to be a basket case.
Correct, and I'll be expecting the worst.
Because what would be, they would be what, a 5 seed if they lose the game? Right? I'm saying they would be a 5 seed, right?
Yeah, they would be at Tampa. Rematch from last year, ironically.
I thought that game went really well.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Although I think that'd be a better matchup for the Eagles, but the way things have been going, I wouldn't feel good.
You need to have guys sit out.
Yes.
I mean, look, when they played the Giants, the string of games that they've played, I don't think they've played well in four of their last five games at all. I just don't. But the one of the five that they did play well was against?
The Giants, yes.
Exactly.
No question.
I mean, they beat the Giants, and they beat them with complete ease. Now, are the Giants playing better now than they were at that time? Yes. Yes. Doug in Wellsboro, Happy New Year, and thanks for calling in on Monday.
Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you.
You too. How was California?
For the most part, it was wet, but I admit I walked out of that place with a big smile on my face.
Can you explain to me in detail on Nick Singleton's long run? I know they quick-snapped it. Did Mike and them see it on tape or something that Utah would look to the sideline after Penn State looked? Can you give me the inside detail on how they came up with
sure.
that?
Sure. Okay, so watch what Hubert does, number 11 on the play. He's creeping up to the line of scrimmage on a third down and three, which is indicating that if Penn State wants to throw, Doug, it's going to be cover zero. And something that was a point of emphasis in practice was that not just, and if you listen to the pregame I did with James, I asked them this. I said, how important is it that not just Sean understand it, but everybody understand the look when it happens? Like, the point of emphasis was everybody had to see it, okay? And Sean saw it, and then what they had done was they had a couple of variations in their oven. I'm not going to get into the second variation. But it was the, okay, he's creeping up, quick look, and then boom, snap. With the idea that even if he's not looking to the sideline, Doug, he's not quick enough to get back to be a single safety.
Did you snap that on his own?
Sean, they had it. They snapped it right when Sean wanted to snap it.
Okay.
The whole point was quick. All right. And that was the whole point of it. That's why you notice everybody fired off on time. And Sean did he act remotely surprised he got the ball? No. Because they knew they were going to do it. Because notice, because when Sean looks over, it's quick and back. All right? It was all planned that way.
Yeah, the play came off clean. You could tell they're prepared. You could just tell by just watching on TV, they quick snapped it. The second thing is, when are other teams going to start using the T formation? Is somebody going to copy that?
I would guess somebody would along the way. But, you know, it's interesting. Penn State uses a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't use. T formation is one. The other one, because of the number of tight ends they have, putting the two tight ends in that power set in the backfield in the inverted wishbone. Now, some other teams do that, but Penn State does it more than others. And do I expect people to copy it? Yeah, maybe along the way, because you have to have, to be honest with you, you have to have three tight ends to make this work. That's a big part of it. So they have Warren on one side and Johnson on the other. And they put Strangen in the backfield as the third tight end. And you also have to have two running backs back there that are willing to block, because you don't know whether you're going to go with Singleton with Allen being a lead, or you don't know if you're going to go with Allen with Singleton being the lead. So you need to have that combination to do it. Two tight ends on the line of scrimmage each side, a tight end in the backfield who's acting as a fullback, and also two running backs are an early talent in their own right, but willing blockers. And see, that's what makes it work.
I'm really surprised they haven't really caught up to that yet. They've done it all year. I'm really surprised that it works, I guess, as well as it does. They get a double team right off the line, and then they get two guys coming to block. And so far, nobody's really figured out how to stop it for 1 or 2 yards when they really need it.
I mean, what I thought was interesting, because I did watch, I rarely watch the replay, but I got to Michigan on Tuesday night, and the game was on. I thought, oh, hey, it was fun. I'll watch some of this. ESPN seemed surprised by the formation. And I was like, okay, I mean, it's sort of the standard operating procedure on short yardage for Penn State. And they've got variations off of it. My goodness, we saw in the Michigan State game one of the variations off it because, boom, they shifted and went to the diamond formation and hit Nicholas Singleton, and he took it in for a touchdown with three blockers in front. Now, I know they don't see a lot of Penn State. That I understand. I also know they did a game 48 hours earlier. That I understand. But they seemed a little surprised by it.
Yeah, I noticed that too. They kept saying Penn State's going old school and stuff, but they've been using it all year.
Yeah, they've done it all year, and I think they refer to it once as a wing T, and it's not a wing T.
No,
because there's no wing back.
Yeah, there's no wing T to it, but that's what they said. Yeah. Last thing is, it'll be interesting to see how Drew Aller's body changes. Are they going to try and trim him down, do you think? He's tall and gangly right now. How would he try and change his body in the offseason, do you think? Thin him down or just let nature take its course?
I think, well, first of all, he got into the weight program last year. He did, you know, and he already slimmed down some from it. Then and once they got done with spring, he was then able to really hit the weight room. And it made a difference because what he developed was more muscle mass in his weight is what he ended up getting. And it was something I was interested in watching the preseason. I think they're going to look at him and basically determine what they think is the best weight for him to operate at. To be honest with you, I had no problem with the weight he's at right now because he moves really well with it. He seems strong. And I don't know as if he really, quote, needs to slim down a lot along the way because I think he carries just on mass the weight pretty well.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call. We'll be listening to you Sunday night. Same as Matt. We'll probably have the TV on, listen to you guys on the radio.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much, Doug. Happy New Year to you and your family up there in Wellsboro.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Steve.
We'll come back. Chris Mack in the next half hour. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.